The Truth News Network. Explaining the truth for those weaned on propaganda. From Rio Linda to Singapore, Fredericksburg to Maui, this is TNN,
the Truth News Network.
And class is now in session. Here's your professor, Dan Newman.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Truth News Network. I'm Dan Newman. Yesterday, we talked about the banking system in the U.S. and the control of the banking system for decades upon decades by just a select few of families in the United States. Today, this is part two, but we didn't title it part two. Title of today's offering is The Federal Reserve, a Necessary Evil. Now, the big mysterious entity, nobody understands it, or very few do, the Federal Reserve, or the Fed. Before the Federal Reserve was founded, the U.S. was plagued with financial crises. At times, these crises led to panics in which people raced to their banks to withdraw their deposits. The failure of one bank had a domino effect in which customers of other banks rushed to withdraw funds from their own banks, even if those banks were not in trouble. Banks needed a source of emergency reserves to prevent the panics and resulting runs from driving them out of business. A particularly severe panic in 1907, resulted in bank runs that wreaked havoc on the fragile banking system and ultimately led Congress in 1913 to write the Federal Reserve Act. The Federal Reserve System, initially created to address these banking panics, is now charged, was charged from that point forward and still is, with several broader responsibilities, including fostering a sound banking system and a healthy economy. Although the need for banking reform is undisputed, for decades, early supporters debated the delicate balance between national and regional interest. Nationally, the central bank had to make it easier to conduct financial transactions between businesses and individuals across regions of the country. A stable central bank would also strengthen the United States' standing in the world economy because foreign individuals, businesses, and governments have confidence in doing business within a country that has a responsible central bank and a responsible economic system. Regionally, the central bank would have to respond to the local needs for currency, which could vary across different regions of the country. A lack of available currency had caused the earlier banking panics. Another important issue was creating a balance between the private interest of banks and the centralized responsibility of government. What emerged, the Federal Reserve System, was a central bank under public control, with many checks and balances. Here's how it works. Congress oversees the entire Federal Reserve System, and the Fed must work within the objectives established by Congress. Yet Congress gave the Federal Reserve the autonomy to carry out its responsibilities with no political pressure. Each of the Fed's three parts, the Board of Governors, the Regional Reserve Banks, and the Federal Open Market Committee, called the FOMC, operates independently of the federal government to carry out the Fed's core responsibilities. And those core responsibilities, we'll get into some of them, but they obviously include doing an examination, an exhaustive examination of the U.S. economy from time to time, and whether or not the Federal Reserve borrowing or lending rate from the Fed to banks should be lowered or should be increased. So that brings up a question. Who the heck runs the Federal Reserve? At the core of the Federal Reserve System is its Board of Governors, or Federal Reserve Board. The Board of Governors, located in Washington, is a federal government agency that is the Fed's centralized component. The board consists of 7 members, and they're each appointed by the President of the United States and confirmed by the Senate. These governors guide the Federal Reserve's policy actions. A governor's term is 14 years, and there are a lot of people that think that's a little bit too long. It is possible, however, for a Federal Reserve governor to serve a longer term. For example, William McChesney Martin, Jr. served as member and chairman of the Board of Governors for nearly 19 years because he was appointed as chairman to complete another person's term and was then appointed to his own term. Appointments to the Board of Governors are staggered, as they should be. One governor's term expires every 2 years. Terms are staggered to provide the Fed political independence as a central bank, ensuring that one president cannot take advantage of his power to appoint governors by stacking the deck with those who favor the policies of that president or his administration. The Board of Governors must be nonpartisan and act independently. In addition to independence, the staggered terms enable stability and continuity on the Board of Governors. The seven governors, according to the original Federal Reserve Act, should represent the nation's financial, agricultural, industrial, and commercial interest. Geography is a factor too, as every governor must be selected from a different Federal Reserve district. Recently, Congress directed that at least one of the governors have experience in community banking. In general, community banks can be defined as those owned by organizations with less than $10 billion in assets. The seven governors, along with a host of economists and support staff, write the policies that ensure financially sound banks and a stable and strong national economy. Governors actively lead committees that study prevailing economic issues, and as you can imagine, those issues change almost on a daily basis. They run the gamut from affordable housing and consumer banking laws to interstate banking and electronic commerce. The Board of Governors also exercises broad supervisory control over certain state-chartered financial institutions. Those are called member banks, as well as the companies that own banks that are called bank holding companies. This control ensures that commercial banks operate responsibly and that they comply with federal regulations and that the nation's payment systems function smoothly. In addition, the Board of Governors oversees the activities of reserve banks, approving the appointments of each reserve bank's president and three members of its board of directors. The governor's most important responsibility is participating on the FOMC, the committee that directs the nation's monetary policy. None more important than examining and setting the lending rate the Fed sets for lending government money to the banks regionally and locally. So, who's the boss of the Federal Reserve? Most people think it's the President of the United States or the Secretary of Treasury. It's not. Heading the Board of Governors are a chairman and a vice chairman who are governors whom the President of the U.S. appoints to serve four-year terms. That current chairman of the Board of Governors is Jerome H. Powell. His is a very highly visible position when there's all kinds of rancor and people railing against the Fed for what it does or what it doesn't do. It's always directed at the chairman of the Board of Governors. Jerome H. Powell is the guy who's in the crosshairs right now of the Federal Reserve. The chairman reports twice a year to Congress on the Fed's monetary policy objectives, testifies before Congress on a number of occasions on a number of other issues, and meets periodically with the Secretary of the Treasury. Other Board of Governors officials are also called to testify before Congress, and they maintain regular contact with other government organizations as well. As the Fed's centralized component, the seven members of the Board of Governors guide the Federal Reserve policy actions. They study trends in the economy. They help forecast the country's future economic direction. The governors also participate in monetary policy making on that committee, the FOMC. In addition, the Board of Governors is responsible for regulations to keep the banking system sound and for overseeing the operations of the 12 reserve banks that are scattered around the bigger cities in the United States. And then, of course, there's the U.S. currency. Did you know that the Federal Reserve banks place the currency you use to make purchases into circulation? That's right. Each bill has a number and a letter that denote the Federal Reserve bank that accounts for that particular bill. You can grab a dollar bill, a $5 bill, a 10, a 20, or a 100. A bill with the number 8 will have the letter H, the eighth letter in the alphabet, which means it appears on the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. For the recently redesigned 5 and 10 and 20 and 50 and $100 bills, the letter and number that identify the Federal Reserve Bank are beneath the left serial number on the face of the bill. It's kind of cool to go grab a few. That's if you have a few in your wallet or your purse, and take a look-see where those numbers and letters are. Well, who owns owns the Fed. And there's a lot of talk about the Federal Reserve being obsolete, and does it or does it not need to be abolished? We're going to weigh in on that and look at some other people's thoughts when we come back in just a moment at truthnewsnet.org.
Speaking the truth, the mainstream press will not. Dan Newman, TNN,
the Truth News Network.
Morning face. You get it when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks! Run!
No, it's me, Linda, from HR.
It looks hungry! Save the children! Save them! Stay back! I've got mace!
Ow! That went in my eyes!
Quit moving!
It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA, love your home.
Dear Mom, I love you. I miss you.
Every year, Snowball Express honors the children of fallen soldiers. Hi, everybody. I'm Tony Orlando. Join me in proudly supporting Snowball Express, a nonprofit that creates opportunities to help heal the children of our fallen heroes. We can never repay the sacrifice our soldiers have made, but we can honor them by giving back to their children. Donate now at snowballexpress.org.
You're fighting back the tsunami of ignorance with Dan Newman, TNN,
the Truth News Network.
Well, we have ignorance in our country about the Federal Reserve, like who owns the Fed? Well, the Federal Reserve banks are not a part of the federal government. Many think that they are. They're not, but they exist because of that act of Congress from way back in 1913. Their purpose is to serve the public. So is the Fed private or public? Well, it gets confusing here because the answer is it's both private and public. While the Board of Governors is an independent government agency, the Federal Reserve banks are set up like private corporations. Member banks hold stock in the Federal Reserve banks, and they earn dividends. Holding this stock does not carry with it the control and financial interest given to holders of common stock in for-profit organizations. The stock may not be sold, or it cannot be pledged as collateral for loans. Member banks also appoint 6 of the 9 members of each bank's board of directors. And that brings up a question. There's a lot of uproar around the nation and has been for many years. Is the Federal Reserve obsolete? Should the Federal Reserve be abolished? The answers here are provided under the condition that U.S. monetary policy is reformed. And that means that the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 would be repealed, and other new legislature would then specifically outline the steps to be taken with ending the Federal Reserve or Third Central Bank of the U.S. That's another name for the Fed. The Monetary Act or Monetary Reform Act could be enacted by Congress, could reform the monetary system with 2 basic steps. 1, abolish the Federal Reserve by repealing the act authorizing it. It's called the Fed Act of 1913, which also has illegally contradicted the constitutional power given to Congress to coin money and control the supply of money. Did you know that? Constitutionally, Congress is supposed to do that. Secondly, congressional action would authorize the Treasury to present U.S. notes equal to the value of currency also known as Federal Reserve notes and also as dollars currently in circulation. U.S. notes would then become dollars as the currency. So let's look at the pros and cons of this. First of all, the pros. Since the amount of money in circulation is just about equal to the amount of money of the national debt, the creation of U.S. notes as a replacement to Federal Reserve notes would simultaneously eliminate the national debt, which is just a little over $20 trillion. The elimination of the debt would occur without inflation or deflation, since the amount of constitutionally mandated U.S. notes printed to replace Federal Reserve notes would be exactly the same, equal. Therefore, the money supply as a currency value would not change. Hence, no inflation or no deflation. The almost $450 billion interest payments on debt also would be gone, And so tax revenues that are currently wasted to pay interest could actually be used for, say, infrastructure. How about that? The fight going on now is over U.S. infrastructure. I would think that $450 billion a year would go a long way towards improving the U.S. infrastructure. Other expenses, which many believe that taxes pay for now, except with the existing system, not all the interest can be paid annually. Therefore, all tax revenues go to just paying interest, and more money must be borrowed as deficit spending. You've heard that term. That's borrowing from banks to pay off just the remaining interest due and also cover the balance of the federal budgets each year. The U.S. could cut all ties with the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the Bank of International Settlements, ending association with some of the institutions that propagate ongoing famine and impoverishment throughout the world, and the unethical domination of already poor countries that accept aid or relief during times of crisis, but then found out that it was money lent to them as debt. This leaves the already worst off in many countries in an even more desperate state because of international destabilization and subrogation results when countries do not or cannot pay their national debts. You know this. On a personal level, there's nothing worse than owing money that you don't have the money to pay. You always feel like you're behind the eight ball. And you know what? You always are. Just imagine if you were the leaders of a country's government and your country owes a bunch of money. When I say a bunch, I'm not talking about thousands or hundreds of thousands or even millions. We're talking about billions of dollars and you can't pay it. Well, in addition, the government would be controlled by the will of the people again. That would be a novel idea. And not a group of independent bankers more powerful than the president or herself and the Congress. The lender is always more powerful than the borrower. People seem to constantly scratch their heads about why, even though we all know that change would be good, and why is it that nothing ever does change, or why is it that government doesn't seem to serve the interest of the people, the voters, but instead the bureaucratic machine, and what has to be nameless, faceless others. Why is the U.S. in a state of constant warfare? The actual dissolution of the Federal Reserve would make it abundantly more clear why it would be beneficial to do so. And finally, abolishing the Fed would put the money provided for the needs of the people, would be back in the hands of the Congress, which is constitutionally granted, and an illegal system that contradicts the mandates of the Constitution and the spirit of our national laws would finally be ended. Here's some thoughts. Consider this. The Bank of England called in their loans on King George III, who then took away colonial money. It was called colonial scrip, and forced English coinage onto the colonists with increased taxation. This was the major catalyst for the War for Independence. Thomas Jefferson ended the first central bank of the U.S. as they tried to recharter. The War of 1812, an almost forgotten war, was the result of the U.S. government's refusal to recharter another central bank. I bet you didn't know that. Andrew Jackson ended the second central bank of the U.S. He was shot at by a lone nut job house painter who missed with both pistols. Abraham Lincoln printed greenbacks to fund the Civil War to maintain the Union. That money was highly successful, with some greenbacks in circulation until the 1970s. They're collectors. Mementos now. Lincoln was shot and killed by another lone nut job, John Wilkes Booth. You'll remember that. James Garfield staunchly claims that he would not allow for the recharter of another central bank in the U.S. He was shot and died of his injuries a week later by a third lone nut job, Charles Guiteau, basically forgotten. You remember that film, The Unforgiven? That was Clint Eastwood. He won an Oscar for Best Picture in that. That was about that James Garfield incident and his death. In 1913, the Third Central Bank of the U.S. was authorized by the Federal Reserve Act of that year, 1913, which promises full employment, was signed by Woodrow Wilson, while banking proponents and their shills feign opposition to their own act as if it was a threat to banking interest. Fast forward a little bit. JFK, John F. Kennedy, signed an order to authorize silver certificates to replace Federal Reserve notes. And just weeks later, he was shot and killed by the fourth lone nut job, Lee Harvey Oswald. Ronald Reagan appeared on national television and claims in his address that the Federal Reserve poses the greatest threat to the future of the United States. And 2 weeks later, he was shot by lone nut job number five, John Hinckley Jr. The secret of Federal Reserve has remained a mystery for more than 100 years now. Reading its history above shows at its creation there was a definite need for it to stabilize the U.S. economy way back in 1913. But it has been questioned for a long time as being essential now. In fact, its purposes have been continually questioned by many. It seems to simply be an entity to which the United States government owes huge amounts of interest dollars simply for printing currency. That's right. That being said, most financial experts will agree that whether or not the Fed remains useful, it's time for the U.S. to get away from fiat currency and back to a currency that is just a representation of the actual hard, tangible assets owned by the U.S. and its citizens, like gold, for instance. For many, a dollar bill is just that, a dollar bill. It's called a fiat currency because it's really, its value is not tied to anything tangible, like back when every dollar that was issued was guaranteed to have an equal amount of a metal at Fort Knox, either silver or gold. Those days are gone, folks. There's no guarantees anymore. That's why it's called a fiat currency. I was in Zurich, Switzerland, several years ago. On the day the Swiss shocked the world, they held a press conference. Nobody knew it was coming, and they announced their termination of a long-standing practice of pegging the value of the Swiss franc, their currency, to the value of the euro. Why? Well, Switzerland owned more gold than necessary to back its issued currency notes, those Swiss francs, with tangible value instead of setting an artificial value pegged to another currency's value. The euro is recognized as being the currency of the European Union, and it's recognized all over Europe. I will tell you this, when you go over there, some countries like the euro, some don't like the euro. Tell you a story. I actually, on a weekend when I was there, went down with a friend to Milan, Italy, which is, I guess, a couple hundred miles south of Zurich, Switzerland. And when we got to the train station, we needed to take a cab to our hotel. I couldn't get the cab driver to take dollar bills, U.S. dollar bills, and I happened to not have any euros in my wallet, but I did have Swiss francs. He wouldn't take the Swiss francs. He wouldn't take the dollar bills. He wanted euros. So when we got to our hotel, I went into the counter and got the girl to come back outside to the cab driver and talk him into taking the U.S. dollars to pay for our cab ride. Euros, kind of universally accepted throughout Europe, but in some cases not. I'll just say this. If you're going to Europe, before you go, wherever you're going to go, check and find out what's the status on their acceptance of what currency over there. Though it rocked the world when that happened, when Switzerland did that, it really stabilized Switzerland's currency. And if you look at how the Swiss franc trades every day on the world exchange, it's always very, very stable, and it stays really high in value because every Swiss franc is backed by an equal amount of gold that's on deposit in their treasury. In today's economically up and down currency markets, when a country has a currency that itself represents a real asset like gold, gives that nation's citizens confidence in their government and that government's economic policies. And I'll tell you what, I'll stand up and vote and say it is just about time. Now, I'll say this. It's past time for the United States to go back to either a silver-backed dollar or a gold-backed dollar. And according to experts, we have plenty of gold and plenty of silver to make that happen. So you got it out in the open now. It's something for you to think about and talk about. And I hope this cleared up any questions that you may have had regarding the Federal Reserve and the currency situation in the United States and in other countries and how that all works. Also, in the previous chapter, part one of this story, we gave you some history of the power that is held almost unilaterally. About eight families hold the economic power, most of it, in the United States. That's kind of scary. But you know what? When you know the truth, sometimes that dispels your fear about something. And now, you know the truth. And you got it from the Truth News Network. Thanks for being here today. Sit tight, stay close all week long, because we got some good stuff to bring to you. Some of it's controversial, some of it's political, some of it's not. But what you get here always is truth at the Truth News Network, truthnewsnet.org. We'll be back tomorrow. And until then, have a great day. So long, everybody.
When you can't control what happens, you can control what you know about it. That means the truth. Dan Newman on TNN.
The Truth News Network.